Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend? Or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, so Seth, the Astros are 6-6. They lose last night. The second time this season they've lost after taking a late inning lead on a two-run homer by a foundational player. Springer did it against, I believe, the Angels last weekend, and then the Bregman last night hits a home run in the late innings to put the Astros up. But Ryan Presley, not only can he not hold the lead, he didn't get an out. The Diamondbacks score two in the bottom of the ninth, and they win 5-4. So the Astros are 6-6. The Oakland A's are 9-4. The Astros are in a very unfamiliar spot now, Seth. I'd have to go back and look and see when the last time was that even just 12 games into a season, the Astros weren't leading the division. You know what I mean?
They got off to a slow start a couple of years ago, but it wasn't so slow. Yeah, I can't remember. Yeah,
I mean, they've dominated this division so much over the last few years.
Yeah, the division has been it's been growing stronger, but yeah, it hasn't been the best of divisions.
Yeah, so they trail. They're already 2.5 games back. You're 12. You go, that's 12 games into the season. Yeah, that's 20% of the season this year. You know, you're 2.5 games back. So this sets up a really, really fun and important series this weekend. They got a little bit of smoke attached to it when Dave Stewart, former Oakland A great, I think former Cy Young winner for them back in the late 80s, really good pitcher for the A's back when they were doing the thing with the Bash Brothers back in the day. I was this from MLB Network? He was doing an interview somewhere, Seth.
I think it was with whatever the local show is. Yeah.
Okay,
I'm not sure their
regional sports network. They do
the way that you hear this guy with the fawning kiss ass laughter afterwards,
right.
And yeah, it felt like he was one of the local broadcasters.
Yeah, that's probably true. This guy's no Kevin Eschenfelder. He wouldn't give you gratuitous pandering laughter like that.
Hell no. Eschenfelder would have made fun of you and called your sister ugly.
So this particular
he wouldn't have. Eschenfelder's not like that at all. I don't know why
he's like the nicest
that.
Guy in the world.
Your sister's a whore. Yeah. That's what Eschenfelder would say.
He would not do that. He 100% would not do that. So this particular host asked Dave Stewart. The question was about Ramon Laureano, who is the center fielder for the A's, who the A's got in a trade following the 2017 season for Brandon Bailey, who is one of these rookies that's pitching, one of the 50 billion rookies that's on the Astros staff. It was a straight-up trade. A couple minor leaguers get swapped. Well, Laureano has been really, really good for the A's so far this season. He's got an OPS over 900. Here is Dave Stewart talking about the impact of Dave Stewart, part of the A's coaching staff, talking about Laureano.
Laureano was much, much more capable of doing that. He's solid. He is a solid player. How the A's got this guy is unbelievable, and what it took to get him is unbelievable on Houston's part. Houston, thank you once again, you cheaters. Laureano was
Then he gets up and just walks off.
Yeah.
Drops the, he does the mic drop.
He drops the mic.
Yeah, thank you once again, you cheaters.
So if you're the...
If anybody can't recall, Mike Fiers...
was the rat.
He's currently pitching for the A's. He pitched last night, so he won't be pitching.
Oh, we don't
this
get
series.
Him this weekend? Oh, that sucks.
He pitched last night or Wednesday. Whatever, he just pitched. He's not going to be in this
he's
series.
He's not pitching in this series. Okay. So do you think stuff like that, Seth, like the Astros, are they at the point now like, okay, yeah, okay, yeah thanks. Like it just kind of rolls off like, them. They're not going, this Dave Stewart, man, I tell you. This guy's got some nerve. This freaking guy, huh?
My gut reaction was to say, yeah, they probably just let that stuff just go. But then I remembered that Alex Bregman exists. And I think Alex Bregman just doesn't let anything slide like that. And there's probably a little bit of chip on the shoulder over David Stewart now that you want to show him what's up. And for what it's worth, if some of you were just terrified that this was going to continue all season long for Bregman and Correa and George Springer, those guys are all on the upward swing right now. Wow. To the point where, just by OPS, at the very least, Bregman and Springer now are above average OPS-wise. They're up into the 700s, and Altuve is on his way. So over the last several games, those guys have been pretty
good. Yeah, starting to show signs of life, no doubt about that. We have a text message here. The Astros may have found something with these two rookie starting pitchers in Javier and Bielak. And I like Taylor out of the bullpen. Does Josh James get some run in the ninth inning moving forward? Games are exciting. I want to see how this team plays in the playoffs. And these young arms can grow up fast. I suggested Josh James as a bullpen alternative when he was still in the starting rotation. And now he's been moved into the bullpen. And Dusty's even, I believe, categorized him as a late inning option. I think James has closer stuff. He just doesn't have closer's control.
Right.
I mean, we saw last night what really hurt Ryan Presley was walking the leadoff guy. You know, it puts you behind the eight ball right away. And then
Josh James is about as accurate as a bank thermometer. That's the thermometer. Have you ever seen an accurate bank thermometer? No. It's always off by like 10 degrees.
I've never noticed that before.
Yeah, oh yeah, watch it. Next time you look at a bank thermometer, like, oh, that's crap. What are you talking about, Bank of America?
Are you talking about like a thermometer like outside, or if I walk into the branch?
You know, sometimes they don't have as many in Houston, but when you get out in the suburbs, sometimes they have the clock and the thermometer.
Oh, yeah, and it says what the temperature is outside.
Yeah. And it all depends. Like, if the sun's hitting it, it'll say, it's 173 degrees out.
I've never thought of that before. When I think of inaccurate signs, I always think of the Waffle House signs, which always have at least two letters burned out of them.
Josh James has closer-type stuff. I would encourage everybody, just for your own mental health, to try to remember the words of A.J. Hinch, who, until Osuna showed up, for years and years would just say, listen, we don't have to have a closer, all right? Like, you don't have to have a closer. People don't care about closers anymore. If you have a guy who is, like, the temperament and the guy and has the right stuff, then by all means, make him the closer, but you don't have to have one unless there's a guy that's clearly the closer. So any of these guys can be good relievers, and I think the point about the playoffs that texter made is an accurate one, which is, look, half the teams in the league are making the playoffs this year. You'd like to not have to face the Yankees, I guess, in the first round in a three-game series, or maybe you would. I don't know. But it's whatever the regular season record is, by the time they get to the playoffs, these rookies will have been tested with fire. You know, and we're going to find out some of these guys, some of these rookie relievers / starters are going to be much more dependable, and you're going to feel pretty good about them. And then there's also, like, hey, let's remember Urquidy pitching in the World Series last year. You get valuable contributions out of rookies, whether they're starters or relievers or whatnot. So there's still a ray of light despite the injuries to Verlander and Osuna. There's a whole lot to get excited about, that at least a couple of these guys, I think, are going to remain good. Some of them are going to fall off, but a couple of them are going to remain good.
You just kind of drove by a really interesting question there. Would you rather face the Yankees in a 7-game series or a 3-game series?
Like right this moment?
This moment, 3 games. Yeah, I don't even care that all 3 games are in Yankee Stadium, in part because none of the jackass Yankee fans are in the building there. The stadium is
empty. Oh, is that how they're doing it?
Okay, that makes sense. The wild card round, the best of three, they're all going to be played at the at the home field of the higher seeded team.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Where would the Astros be seated right this moment?
That's a good question.
Playoffs?
Well, they're second place. I love this. It's like we're doing bracketology 12 games into the season here.
If the season were to end today. This is what it was like in the NHL when they first switched up the playoffs. I think half the talk like in northern places was devoted to like, wait, how do the playoffs work again exactly?
Yeah, that's true. What? Yeah. That's true. So the standings right now, as we mentioned, they're second place in the AL West. So they would be the second best of the second place teams, because right now Cleveland is second place in the Central at 8-6, and Baltimore is tied with Tampa at 5-7, and they're tied for second in the AL East. So the Astros would be the 5 seed right now.
Okay,
they would be the 5 seed, and they would play the 4 seed. They would play the Indians in the first round of the postseason.
Ooh, Clevinger
in Cleveland.
Yeah. Clevinger's been talking a whole lot of smack.
Seth? You seemed very excited right there. Are you making a list of people who are talking smack?
You're
the one who sent me this Dave Stewart tweet at 3:30 in the morning or whatever it was.
Clevinger was the one that was spouting off all offseason about how, hey, it's nice to be able to throw a ball hard at people like that. Yeah. Oh, he was talking all kinds of junk. And meanwhile, we'll see. I would kind of like to stay with this seating right now and see the Indians. At the very least, give me the Indians at some point.
Yeah.
We never got our taste of them when they blew it versus the Yankees.
We did not.
Back in 17.
Yep. Text message, all they got to do is survive to the playoffs. I think that's kind of what you're saying, Seth. Let's just get in the dance and then see where the chips. Without Verlander, that's what it is now. Like, let's get in and then let's see where the chips fall. Let's see if Javier or I'll take one of them still looking like this by the time the postseason rolls around.
Okay, Javier or Bielak, who you got?
Javier.
You think Javier? Javier. Yeah, I think Javier has already shown like better. I think better endurance, more stuff, more command. All of those. Bielak is very, very, very intriguing.
He's more of a grinder.
There's
an electricity to Javier right now.
Yeah, Bielak's got. Yeah, electricity is the right word.
Right.
Now Javier wasn't as electric in his second start. This is a big test for him in his third start in a couple days. Is okay, does he look more like game one, or does he start to falter a little bit? We are all keenly interested.
We are, no doubt. He pitches game 3 of this upcoming set with the A's. They will go Greinke tonight, Framber tomorrow, and then Javier on Sunday. Deshaun Watson said Will Fuller is going to be, quote, one of the best wide receivers in the NFL. How likely is that? We will discuss next.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Good to be with you on a Friday. Hope you got a nice weekend lined up with some sports watching. A lot of stuff to get into. We'll sort of preview the weekend in the next segment. We also have some great moments from the press conferences that were generated by Seth Payne this week. We'll do in the next segment as well. Here's Deshaun Watson when earlier this week on Saturday, he did his first press conference of the season. He was asked about his expectations for Will Fuller.
Will's going to ball out. I mean, Will's going to be one of the best receivers in the league. So, you know, he's came back a lot stronger, a lot faster. I mean, he was real, real, really good, very confident in himself and what he did over the offseason. I'm very confident in what he can do. And we all are as an organization, as a team. So there's no doubt that Will can, you know, take that role and do, you know, great things with it.
So, and I know, Seth, sometimes people like to label receivers. People like, oh, well, who's the number one wide receiver going to be? And I think, as we talked about earlier with Mark, it's going to be tough to pinpoint one on this team because they're deep. There's a variety of skill sets on this team. There's a variety of injury histories on this team as well, which, you know, certainly part of being a number one wide receiver is availability. And that's been Fuller's biggest struggle since he came into the league is staying healthy. But I think it's pretty clear from that quote with Deshaun right there. Like, if you're saying that a guy can be one of the best receivers in the league, that to me subconsciously at least says that Deshaun, that Fuller's the guy. If there is the guy, then Deshaun sees Fuller as a potential the guy.
Well, in regardless of how that plays out statistically, we've seen exactly what that connection is between those two. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in the numbers of Deshaun with and without Will Fuller are pretty stark. You know, we've seen
huge.
Him in every broadcast.
Yep.
His yards per game, his yards per attempt, all of those things go up when Fuller's on the field, regardless of whether Fuller is the guy getting the receptions or not. So I think that psychologically and strategically, yeah, Deshaun understands just how important a healthy Will Fuller is. If you're playing fantasy, I don't think you should take that as, oh wow, they're going to feed us, you know, Fuller a steady diet of 10 targets a week every week. It's not going to be like that. Bill O'Brien, look, Bill, I hate to just jump back into like Bill O'Brien's trying to do the New England offense. He's not trying to do that specifically, but he's trying to grab a lot of elements. And I think one of the things the Patriots do really well that any coach would want to emulate is that the hot guy in any given week is going to be the guy who's best able to exploit a specific defense. And you don't have to feed it to Fuller all the time. But no matter which defense you're facing, there's not a defensive back on this earth that wants to get torched by a really fast guy. And it's always weighing on you psychologically. You know, it's always loosening things up underneath. So that's where Will Fuller's health, it doesn't have anything to do with, man, can he be all pro or can he be the best, one of the best in the league, any of that. He just simply will make everybody else around him, including Deshaun Watson, better if he's healthy and out there.
42 of 64 regular season games is what Will Fuller has played. I'll be honest with you, Seth, if you had asked me, like, how many games has Will Fuller played in his four-year career, I would have gone under 42. Because it feels so different when Will Fuller's not out there for this team. You know what I mean? Like, the 22 games where he doesn't play feel laborious. The games where he has played, now some of those are his rookie year with Brock Osweiler, but the games where Fuller and Deshaun, that might be my project this weekend, the games where Fuller and Deshaun have played together, and obviously those games have all involved DeAndre Hopkins as well,
yeah.
So that there's that caveat, but the 42 out of 64 felt, that's 65% of the games, that felt high to me.
Sean, I read an article a few days ago on a website that I like, and it was a writer that's new to that website, so I'm not going to, like, torch the guy by name or anything.
Ah, go ahead. What's his
name? No, I won't, because he seems like a good guy, and I really don't, but I had a particular objection to one thing he said, which, you know, God bless fandom and everything, but I think the gist of what he was saying was that it's just a narrative that Will Fuller is injured a lot because, quote, Fuller has only gone one season without playing 10-plus games.
Okay, now hang on a second.
Like, all right, is that our standard now? Is that our standard now? Like, as long as you're playing 10-plus games, you're a pretty durable receiver?
Right. No, yeah, playing double digits mean certain things in certain sports. And so, you have double-digit catches in a game. I don't care what. That was a hell of a game. I can put my hand over the rest of the box score. Yeah. You had a hell of a game. Okay, his rookie year, he played 14 games. Yeah. His second year, he played 10 games.
His
third year, he played 7 games. And this past year, he played 11 games. And in 2 of those games, he was in the locker room by the end of the first quarter.
Because
he got injured in the game.
If that doesn't scream durability to you, then I don't know what's wrong.
Yeah,
you know?
My bad,
Sean,
Seth.
You ever wonder if maybe this is why things don't work out for you all the time,
buddy?
I know. Your standards are too high.
I am glass half empty so much of the time. It's ridiculous. Yeah, coming up next, why Will Fuller is a workhorse.
How about that? Oh my gosh! Can you imagine what would be the most like commie Texans like flagship station stuff we could do? Coming up next, these people saying that J.J. Watt is injury prone are clearly. Clearly have an axe to grind with the Texans organization.
We'll have that next.
Bill O'Brien is one of the most even-tempered people in America.
Right.
And anybody
right.
who tries to tell you different is just pulling the wool.
Why
over
every
eyes.
Other executive in football looks up to Bill O'Brien?
Yeah.
So
not my job.
So I see that you found the website Sports Injury Predictor as you were doing some research on Will Fuller.
Yeah, it's scary.
It is. Okay, you ready?
I don't like it at all, but they have really cool graphics.
They do.
It's sportsinjurypredictor.com, and they show little graphics with where guys have been injured.
Yeah, it looks like Operation, the wacky doctor's game.
Oh,
you know,
yeah,
remember that game
Where
you take the bones out of the thing and you can't touch the sides or else you get hit with a buzzer or something like that? That Operation game?
You know what I did, though? I guess I've clicked on it too many times because now they're saying that I need to pay $24 for it.
Same thing happened
membership.
To me. I use this site all the time, I think. But they do give the raw stats here. So the chance of injury for Will Fuller in 2020, according to this site. And this site is an analytical site that takes injury data, and it tries to be a, well, it's what it is, sports injury predictor. It tries to predict whether or not players are going to get injured during a certain season. Chance of a Will Fuller injury in 2020, 97%. 97%. I shouldn't laugh. He's a human being. That means he's getting hurt.
That's messed up, man.
Yeah, no, I know. Chance of injury per game, 19.7%. So if Will Fuller goes into a game, according to this, there's a 1 in 5 chance he's not leaving that game healthy, according to this. Projected games missed. Hey, this should be no big deal. Projected games missed for 2020, 5.2. Last I checked, 16 minus 5.2, Seth, is double-digit games.
Double
played.
Digits. There
He'll
you
be
go,
fine.
Mr. He's basically Cal Ripken Jr.
Yeah. Durability on a scale of 1 to 5.
Yeah.
Durability is a 2, which makes me ask what's a 1?
I would like I'm going to start rephrasing Cal Ripken's career in terms of I'll be like, "Did you know that he played 18 straight seasons with 60% games played at least?" He played from 1981
yes.
through 2001. He played at least 80 games in every season. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, just to frame it in a Fuller friendly fashion.
Yeah.
So the sports injury predictor predicts, not surprisingly, Will Fuller's going to get hurt. So,
but I do I think that he could end up having a very good year.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that, because it's a Bill O'Brien or Bill Belichick offense or anything, that you can't have huge production. I mean, Wes Welker and Julian Edelman have had plenty of 100-plus reception years. Those guys are slot receivers, obviously. But I think the same could be done with Will Fuller, and especially because he is lethal over the middle as well as deep. So I think Will Fuller, if he's healthy, yes, he'll have an awesome year. I would say that about every year he's been in the league, basically. If he could have stayed healthy, he would have had an awesome year. I just don't know if that means, hey, 1,300 yards receiving.
You found some of these numbers. In 28 games with Watson, Fuller has 14 touchdown catches. The big one here, over the three seasons when Watson has targeted Fuller, he's got 125 passer rating, which is beyond elite. That is a monster passer rating. I'll say this too, Seth. If Will Fuller is one of the best receivers in the league this year, and that's a pretty tall order, but if he stays healthy for 14 or 15 games, he's going to be a highly sought-after free agent. If he has that kind of year, it is a lock that the Texans put the franchise tag on him.
And it would make so much sense, wouldn't it?
Yep.
I mean, it's a one-year expense. Well, Sean, is it a lock? I mean, what's their cap situation going to be like?
That's a good question. The cap's going down. Yeah. Maybe with a normal cap, it would be a lock. Now it's probably, if the cap goes down 20, 25 million bucks, then maybe it becomes a lot harder because it's a one-year deal where it's the average of the top five salaries at that position, which is going to be around 18 to 20 million bucks, and it all hits in that year.
You know, it's interesting because the cap is going to go down. Ultimately, I think COVID will hurt free agency on average. But for a few individuals, COVID might end up really helping them out because they're guys that might otherwise have been franchise tagged.
Yeah.
So they'll hit free agency, and like the free agency plunder won't be as much, but those guys wouldn't have been free agents at all if they'd had to go under normal circumstances. So it might work out for a guy like Will Fuller.
It may. All right. Let's get you ready for this coming weekend. Big weekend in sports here in Houston and around the country. And also, Seth Payne was in on the press conferences with the Texans throughout the week this week, and he generated a few moments. We will relive the magic next.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
It is Payne and Pendergast. Big weekend of sports coming up. Before we lay out everything that's going on, Seth, you were a prominent question asker in a lot of these press conferences this week.
I don't. I've heard a couple people say that, and I think it's only because I think it's only because I was actually there and good pupil and everything and asking questions. A lot of times I just lurk at the press conferences. I don't like to step on any of the actual hardcore reporters' toes and take up any of their questions. So I usually try to wait until after everybody's been through, after Jason Bristol and Aaron Wilson and John have asked all their questions.
Yeah, but you usually get a pretty good reaction. And J.J. Watt likes when you ask questions because you're a fellow defensive linemen.
Yeah. Hey, you know what I've noticed, though, Sean?
What's that?
I like asking these questions. I think players and coaches sometimes enjoy my questions because I like to ask nuts and bolts questions about, like, exactly how they're teaching a certain thing or, like, how they're teaching a technique. I've noticed that almost none of the answers that I get, even though people afterwards will say, like, wow, they really lightened up and they really enjoyed talking to you, none of the answers actually get used in any articles anywhere. So I think I'm largely providing zero service to the press corps here in Houston when I ask questions.
Okay, so fair enough. So along those lines, Seth, I watched this take place on the Zoom conference call.
Yeah.
So I have no idea how this is going to translate on radio because I watched it take place. But you asked Mike Devlin a question about how you're coaching the blindside rule, the blindside block rule.
And so for those of you that don't remember, this has both helped and hurt the Texans. Last year, early in the season,
Titus Howard.
Was it Titus Howard early in the season and somebody else too? There's a rule that was enacted last year where if an offensive lineman goes to block a defensive anybody at all, or if an offensive player goes to block a defensive player, and if the offensive player is moving towards his own end line, so like if you like say it's a snap, he's facing the opponent's end zone, but then on a sweep or something, he turns and all of a sudden he clears out a guy. It's called a blindside block, and it's illegal now. The problem is a lot of times it's not actually blindside, and it's when an offensive lineman is between a defensive lineman and his quarterback. So the offensive lineman is put in this quandary where you're like, okay, do I block this guy and get a penalty, or do I not block him and let him crush my quarterback?
Yeah.
And then it helped the Texans versus the Bills because the Bills got flagged for it on that Josh Allen scramble to the right.
That was a huge call in that game. In the Bills game.
So I've been waiting to ask this question of Mike Devlin all offseason. How exactly do you coach this technique without getting flagged?
Right, and you got your opportunity. And I guess what I would encourage people to do is picture Mike Devlin, who is, you know, he's not a small guy.
He's a former NFL offensive lineman.
Picture him sitting at a table in front of the Texans background doing his Zoom conference call. And then after Seth asked this question, he literally stands up and starts showing the technique, and his butt is in the camera, and
it was cool because it was Zoom. Nobody could pan back or anything. Just his butt.
You had no choice. Yeah, like this is the worst spy cam of all time. How do I get out of here? How do I get into the chat rooms? Get me out of here. Here's that exchange.
Mike, this blindside block rule has been in effect for a year now. How do you coach this thing? It seems like offensive linemen are put into a really tough scenario.
So you talk about like on the screen and things like that?
Yeah, or like in the playoffs.
Yeah, so let's just say we're going on a screen, right? I wish I could stand up and show you, but I basically teach you like a basketball technique. So as I'm coming back, if I'm going back and I'm looking facing towards my goal
in the screen right now,
I'm going to take my opposite hand and rip across like a basketball and block them like that. I don't know if you can see me.
Yeah.
Oh, we can see you.
That way there's no contact and just kind of shielding them.
Is that what Duke Johnson was doing on that 2-point conversion?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah, because the rule, that's what everyone's kind of, you know, whatever. But yeah, I'm with you.
And I felt bad there. I felt bad there because I felt
it's the same thing. We had an offensive.
You take that.
I'm sorry. Yeah, I forgot.
It was a long answer, but we got the gist.
Well, that was on the 2-point conversion in the playoffs when Deshaun ran for the 2-point, Duke Johnson did what was one of my favorite plays of all time because it was such a heady job by Duke Johnson. When he cleared out the defender that was about to hit Deshaun, it would have been a peelback block if he had turned around and hit him face to face. So Duke Johnson he boxed him out.
Yeah, he just
When Devlin was saying, I guess it's not necessarily boxing out if you're elsewhere on the court, but whatever. Yeah, he's talking about boxing him out.
Yeah.
So that's got to be, you're going to see that this year as offensive linemen, like basically trying to somehow box out freakishly athletic defensive linemen who have a full head of steam.
That was just so funny to me. The visual of the thing was so funny. Like, I don't know if you guys can see. I'm like, all I can see is your butt. Your butt is in the camera right now.
Oh, but by the way you responded, did it feel like maybe they weren't supposed to be talking about the fact that Duke Johnson boxed out on that play?
A little bit. Although sometimes, Seth, I wonder if if he remembers exactly which play you're talking
about. Oh, that's true. You know, yeah, he might not have even realized that happened. You're absorbed with coaching your own guys and everything. Yeah.
He may not have even known. He played along. It was cool. So one of the other coaching questions that you asked was to TJ Yates. This was a really funny one at the end of TJ Yates' press session.
All right, TJ, because of COVID, like you referenced, there's a lot of uncertainty this year. Where are you unofficially on the depth chart for the Texans right now?
I don't even think that's possible. Isn't that the Matt Nagy rule? Like, you can't even do that anymore. So, if I have to throw some balls in practice, I'm always available.
There's no term limits here. They can activate you anytime they want. There's a practice squad role for me out there somewhere, TJ. Yeah. Veterans are allowed this year.
I think you and me are on the same level in that depth chart right there.
Not a good place.
So that's good. He sees you as a peer of that. He can break your balls. It's like there was two players breaking each other's balls right
TJ
there.
TJ and I never played each other, but it was like we crisscrossed enough that we had mutual friends and everything.
Sure.
You know, the Matt Nagy rule, I never knew about this. And a couple people sent this to me yesterday after we kind of brought it up briefly. But Nagy was an intern for Andy Reid with the Eagles at the time.
Okay.
And they tried to activate him at some point during the season, and I guess the NFL nixed it, and then they turned it into a rule that you're not allowed to play for a team if you've been a coach for that team in that year. And he was just an intern at that time.
Because Belichick would have 12 guys that were assistant quality control pencil sharpening coaches.
So I don't know. Like I am wondering if maybe at some point – I'm wondering if TJ knew that rule pretty well, because at some point the Texans may have dabbled with the thought of it. You know, like, hey, if push came to shove, if somebody got injured, especially in training camp, maybe we'd do this.
Well, he would have. He looks like he's still in pretty good shape. And last year he would have only been 2 years removed from playing, I think.
I thought he actually looked – he's one of the guys that – you know, the football players, you tend to either gain weight or lose weight when you're done. Nobody stays exactly the same. I think he's gotten pretty fit.
Yeah,
he might have been I would have worried about him out there taking a hit, because he looks like he's lost 20 pounds.
Yep.
I wouldn't have thought he had 20 pounds to lose.
Next one from Seth Payne. This was the Brandon Cooks press conference yesterday, where Seth dialed in on two of Cooks' former quarterback teammates, and Cooks showed what kind of teammate and person he was, even for guys he doesn't play with anymore.
You played with Drew Brees and Tom Brady as they were later in their career. Is there anything about their approach to the game that they learned along the way that maybe a younger quarterback wouldn't know yet that you could pass on to Deshaun?
Yeah, I mean, I think you talk about I know you mentioned Drew and Tom, but, you know, Jared was a special guy as well. And you talk about a guy who had a routine. From all three of those guys, I think it's all about finding your routine and what works for you. It's not going to look the same for everyone else, but ultimately what you see from those three guys is how much they put into their body and, their focus on taking care of their body. And as long as you do that, I think everything else is going to fall into place.
So that was Seth. I guess the question is, why do you hate Jared Goff so much?
Yeah, no, and that's right. I knew that Brandon Cooks would answer it that way if all I said was, hey, you played with Brees and Brady. That's why I tried to focus on the fact that they were older quarterbacks. So, like, hey, well, I should have said, hey, what would those guys tell Jared Goff? But Brandon Cooks, I think, demonstrated this a couple times now. He's very cognizant of including Jared Goff in any of these discussions about guys with whom he's played, because people are always going to bring up Brees and Brady. But he went to a Super Bowl with Jared Goff, and Brandon Cooks had a great year with Jared Goff. So I respect that, even though I feel like he didn't listen to the whole question.
Yeah, I do. I do feel it. Well, he definitely didn't listen to the part where you brought up the fact that they were, you know, they were older quarterbacks. That'll be interesting, you know, between Cooks and Cobb and the guys they've played with. They've played with five pretty good quarterbacks, anywhere from pretty good to great to legendary quarterbacks. With Cooks, it's Brady, it's Brees, it's Goff. With Cobb, it's Aaron Rodgers, and he played a year with Dak Prescott last year. I wonder if by, you know, through training camp or through the first month of the season or by the end of the season, certainly if Deshaun will be able to look back and say, hey, I was able to make this play, or that, or this adjustment, that adjustment, because of the experience that those guys had with those. They gave me advice of what so-and-so did, and that really helped me in this situation.
there are two things that these guys can help out with, respectively, a lot. One is that in Green Bay, Aaron Rodgers is one of the greatest improvisational quarterbacks who ever lived. You know, throwing on the run, creating on the run, running in order to throw instead of running just to run. All those things, because of that, they created very intricate scramble rules for Green Bay receivers. And it's one of the unfortunate things about Aaron Rodgers having to play with increasingly younger players that it's harder for those guys to grasp all this. But when Randall Cobb and Aaron Rodgers were really, really firing on all cylinders, they had kind of an unspoken communication and understanding about how a play would break down. You know, like if a play is going to break down, this is how we're going to respond to it. And it was above and beyond just the old, yeah, work back to the quarterback when he's in trouble. So I think that that could help Deshaun a lot. In terms of Brandon Cooks, I think Brandon Cooks, having played just a season in New England, what he will have learned there from Tom Brady's ability to diagnose pre-snap and to adjust routes pre-snap or to react to coverages and to adjust routes during the play based on the coverages, that's what makes Tom Brady special, and that's what makes that offense special. And I think that whatever Brandon Cooks can impart to Deshaun there, and Deshaun's been able to learn from, you know, whoever, Brian Hoyer along the way, or but any of the other guys that have had time in New England, I think that's what Cooks will bring to the table intellectually as well as just physically playing on the field.
Last Seth Payne moment in a press conference, he asked David Johnson about Quizlets.
Players mentioned the Quizlets. Could you take us through exactly how you guys are using those, like how in-depth they are? What's your mean score? Like how hard are these things?
So I think I'm the only one who used – I don't know if anyone else. I'm the one who's used Quizlet ever since I got into the league as a rookie. And what it is literally just flashcards that you can use, and they give you different choices, multiple choice. You can write it out, or it's between they give you different questions. And so it's helped me out a lot. And I think, especially learning this offense, is back to kind of a BA type offense where there's a lot that goes into it. There's one play, but there's multiple formations that it can be ran out of. And so Quizlet has helped me out a lot in learning this offense.
That's damn near a live read for Quizlet right there that he gave.
Well, yeah.
David Johnson here for Quizlet.
I wish Quizlet had been around just for when I was in school, too, because you could just create these flashcards. I had heard from Anthony Weaver. I need to ask Anthony about just exactly how they create them and everything, because, you know, all the ones that I'm finding online are like the questions are like, how many games are in an NFL season or things like that. They're pretty basic. I'm assuming that David Johnson is using more advanced ones than that.
I saw you post yesterday the screen cap of that exact question, and someone had a really good reply to it, which is, not that easy to answer this year.
That's true.
How many games in an NFL season?
Got me on a technicality.
right.
Plus, they could be saying, like, well, actually, it's actually 16 times 32. That's how many games are. Oh, no, wait. 16 times 16. That's how many games there are.
It could be. The correct answer this year is just a shrug emoji. That's the correct answer. Yeah. How many games in an NFL season? Shrug emoji.
So, but that was and David Johnson kind of touched on a similar topic when they asked him about how do you show leadership with these young guys. It's honestly, and I guess this probably would be similar advice in a whole lot of different professions. It's the most boring advice there is, but to rookies, like what I used to drill into their head is know the playbook, know your plays. Like it's similar because when like the bullets start flying and it's a high stress situation, that's when your brain turns into water and runs out your ears. If you don't just flat out know the playbook back and forth, left and right. And you'd be amazed, even as guys get into their 9th and 10th year, so much of your studying is just flat out being sure you know the plays. And what David Johnson was talking about there was like, okay, I've got a specific play. I got to run through my head, what is it like when they line up in an over defense and in an under defense, when it's cover two, when it's cover three, when it's all these different things. Each of those scenarios is going to affect the play differently. And it's got to get to the point where each of your responses to each of those scenarios is automatic. So, like, football IQ doesn't have as much to do with Wonderlic scores as it does just sitting down and doing the drill work. Like, Peyton Manning wasn't as smart as Eli in terms of just natural intelligence, IQ numbers and everything. But he's a much smarter football player because I think he just drilled it more.
Yeah.
So David Johnson is probably telling a lot of young guys a lot of really boring advice, and some of them will listen and some won't, which is just simply just get your head in your playbook. That's the only thing that matters for a rookie.
I thought one of the interesting things he said, Seth, was when he was asked about learning the offense and how hard it is to do, not being able to be around guys, you know, physically doing it, like walking through, and as opposed to being on Zoom conference calls. He said it's just, I'm paraphrasing here, but he said it's harder because I like doing things in person. That was the answer where he mentioned the Quizlets the first time yesterday. But I thought one thing was very interesting, and I think it's a sign of this is somebody who's taking what was a negative experience and at least trying to pull something positive from it. And he said, you know, part of the last 3 years, you know, one of the reasons why his production's been down, I think people think, is because he's been in three different offenses with three different head coaches and three different offensive coordinators, and it just hasn't worked out for him. He said because he's been in so many different offenses the last few years, it has made him better at learning an offense,
yeah. You
know, studying an offense, how to, you know, where to, you know, invest your time, how to process it, how to study it. I thought that was a really interesting answer, and I thought it was an optimistic answer, you know, taking something good out of what's been a negative experience for him.
Well, and everybody we talk to in Arizona, in terms of people who cover the team, have gushed about him as a person, yeah. Right? And it said that he's very upfront about answering questions about his production and all of that. And it's just a matter of, okay, can he recapture, gosh, I guess, like, if he could recapture 75% of what he was in 2016 and maybe be in an environment where it feels more stable, will actually make that much of a difference.
Yeah. I think, Seth, if you're asking me what I want out of David Johnson, I would say two things. One, be the receiving threat out of the backfield that you're purported to be. And two, I don't care about him getting volume stats back to where he was, but just be a more efficient runner than you've been the last few years. To me, it's not the number of yards that bothers me about the last few years. It's the fact that the dude's been barely averaging 3.5 yards a carry, and when he was at his apex, he's averaging 4.6, 4.7 yards per carry. And a lot of that was because, as you've pointed out many times, that he was breaking tackles back then. It's not that the guy's super elusive, although he does have a really nice jump cut. He was a stronger, more powerful runner back then. So I don't care if it's 1,000, 1,200, 1,400 yards. Just be efficient.
Yeah, it's a little bit like, okay, if Superman could still fly but not very fast, he'd be like, hey, look, he's flying. Like, yeah, but I mean, like, he doesn't do crap with it anymore.
Right.
Like can he fly fast again?
Yeah. Nobody's flying every day. He's flying a lot.
Can he get to the locomotive before it goes into the ravine? You know, like, oh, why? He flew to the scene of the crash very well, yeah.
All right, Seth, so Rockets Sunday, you get the Astros and the A's this weekend, PGA Championship.
Ooh.
Yeah, it's a big weekend, man. You
big
excited?
Yes, I'm very excited. Yeah. I'm excited to but I've been savoring this lack of sleep that I have. It's the old, like, oh, yeah, I had Astros and Rockets to watch yesterday, and I'm grateful for it.
Yeah, how weird. Meaningful July baseball for the Houston Astros this weekend. That's fun. It'll be a lot of fun.
This is typically a really dead time in sports, I'll remind everybody.
It is. It's a
you
fire
know, it's
hose
like the
right
doldrums
now.
Doldrums of the baseball season. There is no basketball. There's no football. But now it's big.
Savor it. Enjoy it. Seth, have a great weekend. Antibodies to you, my friend.
Antibodies and T-cells to you. And stay sanitized.
Yes, I shall stay sanitized. Antibodies and T-cells to all of you. We appreciate you listening. It was a good week. And training camp is here. And we are going to get it going next week. We're looking forward to that. John Lopez, Landry Locker, Figgy Fig, they are in the loop. They're up next. We'll see you on Monday.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.